You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
You 100% know they're going to say no. And so why spend so much time, and you do this every day, writing so many people when you know they're going to say no? And this applies if I'm a businessman writing to someone to set up a meeting or sales or relationships or anything. There's some subtleties and some nuances between asking and being annoying and getting a no and eventually getting a yes. So I want to explore those nuances.
I think you try and think of their ends in mind. What do they want? They want to get publicity for their people over there. They want to be treated fairly. They want to sell books, sell albums, promote a show. And so we can do all that for people. We have a very big following. We have a loyal listener base. We have something that they're going to be proud of.
Okay, so special podcast. Once again, Steve Cohen, the podcast producer, on. And Steve was showing me something earlier that fascinated me so much, I wanted to do a podcast about it. And Steve, I will describe what you showed me. Maybe you don't even know. You wrote to Taylor Swift. You emailed, I guess, her agent or whatever. Who'd you email?
I emailed her publicist.
You emailed her publicist and said, hey, can Taylor Swift go on the podcast? Something like that. I'm shortening it.
Sure.
And you probably gave some good reasons and blah, blah, blah. And you knew she was going to say no. And you showed me the no.
Yeah.
And you do this quite a bit. Like, you'll email Barack Obama and say, can he come on the podcast? And of course, we're going to get a no. But you have a strategy. It's almost like you know, you 100% know they're going to say no. And so I've never done this strategy. Like, why spend so much time? And you do this every day, writing so many people when you know they're going to say no. And so then I have some follow-up questions. And this applies to, like, if I'm a businessman writing to someone to set up a meeting or sales or relationships or anything, you know, what's the difference between, there's some subtleties and some nuances between asking and being annoying and getting a no and eventually getting a yes. Yeah. So I want to explore those nuances.
Sure. I always try and treat people the way I want to be treated. You know, we've talked about this before. Like, I spent a long time in media and I had a lot of people ask me for things. They asked, when I was a TV producer, they would say, would you be interested in so-and-so? And some people I thought were tone deaf. Some people I thought were relentless. Some people I thought were a little bit annoying. And some people I thought had no idea about our program and what we wanted to do. And, you know, it was like they're trying to sell milk in a hardware store or something. They had no idea about what our show did. So, like, you'd immediately be turned off. But with some of those situations, you know.
So they would write. So just understand.
Yeah.
They would write you saying, hey, producer of your show, can I be on your show? I did this, this, and this.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
And you would say no because they were an obvious no.
Yeah. Or, like, obvious no. And, you know, fast no is the next best thing to a yes, you know, so you have to just kind of.
Why is a fast no the next? I don't know.
Because then you're not wasting all that time on, well, are they going to do it? Or, you know, look, you'd want to hear a yes, obviously, but if it's, you know, and under the best of circumstances, you want a no with some qualification or some hope involved or thing or a reason where you can feel better about yourself.
But here, but like Taylor Swift, you know, there's 100% chance she's going to say no.
Yes.
And not give a reason.
Yes. And they'll say, hey, but in this particular case, this woman said, hey, Steve, great to hear from you. Wow, it sounds like you're doing great. And in our case, maybe they'll think, well, why not? You know, like why not do it? You know, you had other entertainers there who were really prominent and people, and as incongruous as it is, you know, we actually, I personally listened to James, that publicist. I'm sure Taylor Swift is not sitting in Nashville listening to the James Altucher show, but if you are, thanks for listening, Taylor.
And we use Taylor in quotes because you do this strategy every single day.
I do it a lot, and but I'm not like at sea at the beach and I'm sending a message in a bottle. Like, I have an idea of what I'm doing. And like we've said, you either win or you learn. Like, you learn from it and, you know,
But how do you avoid, like you were talking about the people who, would, when you were producing a TV show, people would call and say, hey, can I be on your show? And you would get annoyed. How do you avoid being annoying to Taylor Swift's people?
To their people, you kind of ask, and you know, and it's interesting because speaking to you helps me clarify the way I think. And I remember, you know, last time, you know, we spoke, I talked about how do you get people to a party? You invite them early, you invite them often, you tell them who else is at the party, you be a good host. And then afterwards, I realized, like, a corollary to that, a fifth thing I would say is, you know what other parties they're going to. And so, okay. If Taylor Swift did Tim Ferriss's podcast, I would feel like, wow, if you like Tim's or, you know, or Seth Godin's podcast or any number of Brian Koppelman's podcast or any number of people, and I would be able to say, okay, well, it's not totally implausible. And I can conceive of a way in which, yeah, it's not totally implausible. It's not ridiculous. Like,
so you build, so essentially what you're doing is, you know, they're going to say no, but you build a plausible enough argument that they can't be annoyed.
Yes.
And it's not like you're begging. It's not like you write back and say, no, please, she should go. Well, after they send the no, it's not like you write back and say, oh, please, she's going to, I know she's going to be doing a concert for five days in a row at Madison Square Garden. She should go on then. You stop at the level of annoyance.
Yes. I mean, I'm not going to say, hey, let me get on the next flight to Nashville and I'll be outside her place. And, you know, but I think that, yeah, I stop at the level of annoying and you say, you hope and you say, thank you so much. Please let us know if you ever want to come to a podcast, which, you know, or if you have anybody else you think might work for us. I think
right, because you're writing to the publicist. They might have other people in their network.
Yeah.
And so you're just trying. So it seems like there's two purposes. One is, or several purposes. The first is they might, one in a million chance, they might say yes.
Yes, sure.
And by the way, it's kind of funny how we can get people, not get, but, you know, sometimes people as successful and famous as, like, let's say a Richard Branson will come on, and yet there are some people that seem so out of reach, like a Taylor Swift.
Sure.
That and I don't know why, I don't know what the formula is, like who is the type of person that feels out of reach, but Taylor Swift feels amazingly out of reach somehow. But there's the one in a billion chance she says yes. Then the other reason is you build a plausible enough argument that her publicist sees that this is legit, so that she starts thinking of maybe other people she could help.
Sure.
Because you're allowing her to succeed at her agenda, maybe not with Taylor, but with other people that publicist is involved in, so that maybe there's a yes. Then the third thing is, you're letting these publicists simply know what you're doing. You're just keeping in touch, so you're always on the radar. So a year from now, if she's working for someone else, and we're doing something else, there might be some
way
to do this.
I think ultimately, and I felt this way when we started, and you know, I used a sports analogy, like the best teams don't keep recruiting, they select. But I want us to be open-minded and to have a push towards us rather than a pull. And I think, like, the more, if you want to have the world, you know, if you want to have the world at your disposal, you have to go out and meet the world halfway. And
but let me play devil's advocate again.
Sorry go ahead.
But like asking, when you asked, so you ask a lot of people
of course,
every day. And of course, some say yes, because we do have guests on the podcast who are amazing. And you build this plausible argument, so she could potentially weave an argument to say, yeah, this might be good for Taylor Swift for some reason. Yeah. But at what point, does it actually become annoying?
Okay, well, first of all, I also feel like a lot of these people, you know, who are doing their jobs, some are more dedicated than others. When I left jobs, people would say to me, Steve, we miss you over here because you got back to us and other people didn't. And I felt like it's a job. You know, that's their job too. You know, and I respect everybody, love everybody, and I want them to do well at their job. Like, I've had guests come on when I was at different shows and I said, you know what? I want you to do those other shows. You're doing your job for your clients. I want everybody to do well. So it doesn't have to be adversarial. I'm doing this. I could feel with 100% certainty that these people who come through here, I believe in what we're producing. I believe that we help people. I believe that, you know, people are going to get a lot out of it. So I don't feel ashamed to do it. And that's the resistance that we have to go through. You know, it's easier to just sit back and say, okay, what's the use of doing this? And I felt like the old, like, you know, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. You miss all the shots you don't take.
But people say that to me sometimes,
yeah.
And I get resentful. Like, so sometimes people write to me and say, yeah, hey, can you take a look at my business plan?
Right.
You know, I feel like, oh, they're asking me for like a big chunk of my time.
Right.
And I don't want to.
Well, that's the old, like, hey, I'd like a book on chutzpah and I want you to pay for it. I mean, like, I think like it takes them a couple of seconds or something to say, thanks, but we're busy. You know, like, I expect them to have a lot of people wanting them and they should expect that as their job, you know, to do that. But I try and be very appreciative to them. I mean, I try and be very appreciative, and I know that in the event that some of these people come on, they'll be like, wow, this was a different kind of interview. They were, you know, he asked me about entrepreneurship or how I overcame this. And in that sense, I feel like we're offering something, not taking something from them. Like some of these other people who are asking you to do things, they're not intrinsically saying, well, how does this help James? You know, how is it a win-win? You know, and I think it's kind of like that joke where Reverend Jesse Jackson used to say, well, that's like a ham and egg sandwich. And he would say, well, what's that? And they said, well, the chicken says, you know, sure, I just have to give up an egg. But the pig says, whoa, I got to give up a leg. You know, it's not equitable. You know, in this case, okay, you say no and move on. But I think from my perspective, you know, this, like I've said, is a privilege and a responsibility. I know that there's a greater good out there for it. But I also think Derek Jeter used to say, like, in life, like when he would play baseball, like sometimes you lose and sometimes you get beat. And if you get beat, hey, the other guys are better or they have another reason or they're picking a show because they have more viewership or we don't have enough for it. But if you lose, you don't even try. And you'll see somebody else do it and you'll be like, wow, we should have asked, you know? And so I don't want us to have that kind of situation. And you don't know. And you just kind of periodically go. And sometimes you shop for things in season and sometimes you shop for them out of season. And we have to kind of...
What's in season mean?
In season mean like, okay, I thought about it today when I was looking at James Comey. Now, we may or may not have a white hot passion to want him, but... You know, interesting guy. And maybe 2 or 3 months ago when his book was on there and he's doing every single network show, we may say, you know what? We're not going to get him because you have to let the big dogs eat first. But a month or two down the line, maybe it's out of season and maybe it's a little bit off. And he's like, okay, you know, it's less crowded and we can go in and say, you know what? Sales are slumping and we can provide value to them over it. Or we can get a different perspective that somebody else didn't have. And I just think, again, like, for us, we have to believe in what we're doing. We have to advocate for ourselves. Nobody else is going to do it. And I don't think it's implausible. And I think in a lot of these cases, yeah, I'm a very experienced person at this. I've done this for a long time. And it's the old, like, why not you? Why not us? Why not our show? And for those listening outside, if you have really great people, please send us. And we want to put the best show together. Like, it's great. Like, on a day like today or recently we interviewed Seth Godin or T.D. Jakes, and they were great conversations. And I think you, again, not to sound like Smithers with Burns, but like you were able to get stuff out of them that other people probably couldn't.
So, okay, so what makes a good ask? Because I feel like I'm not good at asking. I feel afraid that they're going to either say no or think I'm foolish. Or...
I think you try and be very direct and you try and think of their ends in mind too. You know, the old Zig Ziglar, you get whatever you want, helping enough other people get what they want. What do they want? They want to get publicity for their people over there. They want to be treated fairly. They want to sell books, sell albums, promote a show. And so we can do all that for people. We have a very big following. We have a loyal listener base. We have something that they're going to be proud of. Like Keith said, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. Like they can listen to it a year from now and be like, wow, you know, if somebody wants to hear me, what I have to say, they could hear it on James's show. It's a great endorsement for what I want to do.
Like today, you probably asked a bunch of people, how do you select who to ask, even knowing that they're going to say no?
Yeah, I try and...
Like in the past week, who did you know would say no? Other than Taylor Swift, who did you know would say
Paul McCartney, I knew was going to say no.
So you asked Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Did he say no?
He himself didn't say no, but his person, Steve Martin,
said no. And how did you construct the...
I said, hey, have to ask, it's like any chance, Sir McCartney's free. Thanks so much, Steve. He's not, and I said,
but it doesn't
okay.
sound like you constructed an argument. You just like blindly asked.
I said, hey, we've had so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so on, and I think we would do a great interview with him. So if there's any chance he's free, we'd love to have him. And thanks, Steve, he's not, And I think about that a lot when I watch television. You see like these ads all the time for Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Progressive Insurance. And maybe after the 10th or 15th time, they start realizing like, hey, wow, you think like, why do these places need to advertise? But I think subconsciously it makes them think like we're there. And I know as a news producer, when I started at CBS, we competed with a Today Show and Good Morning America, and they had higher ratings, but we did better on breaking news stories, and where, okay, it wasn't designed with like celebrity or their publicist or people around them, and we beat them to it. And I know for me personally, there'd be a big story, and I usually would be one of the first people to email them or call them. And they would always associate me and conflate where I was or the network I was with that kind of stuff. So the more and more you start associating yourself, like if you see yourself as that kind of show, we shouldn't self-reject. We have amazing shows, And I think so, yeah, I believe in it. So it's
so it reminds me of,
yeah.
In my very first business, wanted to sell it as quickly as possible. And I remember I wrote to the head of mergers and acquisitions at Omnicom, the big ad agency, and I said, we're interested in selling the business. And she came over and visited, and she said, you're too small. But then every month for the next year, I sent her an update. So when they were finally in a position where they were looking for medium-sized bit, we were growing, yeah. And she was looking at one point for medium-sized businesses to acquire, she reached out to me because if that had been the very first time a year later that I wrote to her, she probably wouldn't have reached out to me. I had to keep in her face, for a year.
I'll listen to very successful people talk, and we've had Brian Grazer on here and other people, and they just talked about how tenacious they were, and I think there's a difference, I think...
But what's the nuance between tenacity and annoying? Because we've seen that
sure,
too.
And it's kind of like that expression between like, what's the difference between a mirage and a vision? Like, if nobody else sees it, it's a mirage. But if other people see it, it's a vision. And I think that I think everybody has an intuitive sense. I'm sure some people get those, an email and roll their eyes or be like, oh, this guy's annoying, or look at the temerity of this person, and I just kind of feel like you can't let other people's problems become your problems. I'm coming at it from an honest, genuine, sincere place. And, when people do come here, they'll appreciate it. And
what's the nuance? Like,
oh, the nuance.
Where would it
sometimes
be
I'll
line?
Be like, hey, don't mean to be annoying. Like, I'll inoculate myself by saying it, but I'm not gonna.
And
you
who
know.
And who would be annoying? Like, let's give a bad example.
Okay, bad example. I just think that sometimes if somebody says no, then I think you have to respect why they say no. And I think sometimes maybe And I think by persisting or by saying, hey, I used to have that in TV where people were like, we'd really love to do this. And it's not about your ego, it's about their ego. And I think if I honestly feel like, hey, it's in your best interest to do it, here's why. But other times, you know, where I'm more accepting of it. I could sit back and say, as much as I'd like to have Billy Joel on, he doesn't really want to get up and come here to do it. Or, you know, I don't think he does a ton of stuff. And, you know, and I can't necessarily say, wow, this is something that really would help him, unless, you know, but at least I would ask. And I would say, okay, if he ever does anything, I mean, Marc Maron got Barack Obama on or whoever. And I think that, I think people appreciate people who work hard. People appreciate people who have passion. People appreciate people who respect the way their job and their requirements and their bosses and their constraints. And so for me, it's, I don't want anybody who wants to take a shortcut. And, you know, that seems to me when those people emailed you and said, hey, could you do this for me? They want a shortcut. And, you know, and we love talking to people who have a lot of passion or, you know, an appreciation for things. And we would love to help them, you know, in those situations. But if somebody's looking for a shortcut or only is outcome oriented, not process oriented, you know, and so, yeah.
What about like, let's say you write Billy Joel and his people and they don't respond at all. There's just silence.
Sure.
Is there a nuance? Like, do you write again 3 weeks later or do you wait for something to change or
yeah. What? No, I think sometimes I'll follow up and I know people are busy and I know we're not perfect. You know, that's something we have to try and get better. And I try, you know, I think like, I remember, you know, and hopefully we'll have him on soon. Don Miguel Ruiz wrote the Four Agreements where it's like, don't take things personally, you know, always do your best. And I think I try not to take things personally. And I think that, but I also feel like I remember dealing with somebody and, you know, I had emailed her a few times about a particular guest and she was somebody I knew. And she, and I said, hey, did so-and-so ever get back to you? And she said, well, you know, he never emailed me back. And I said to her, that's the wrong answer. And she's like, what do you mean? What should I do? And I said, hey, you should say, hey, get back to my friend. And she's like, well, I tried. I work with him. And I said, well, if you want to make omelets, you're going to have to crack some eggs. You know, this is what you want to do. Like, so for us, we want to have a great show. And so some of it, it's bigger than me. And so some of it is, you know, it's a responsibility and a privilege, like I said. So it's not about, oh, me being afraid of resistance. Persistence beats resistance. And so...
Except sometimes it could be annoying. Like if, let's say if Billy Joel's people don't respond and you write like a week later and say, hey, can Billy Joel come on? I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you need more reasons then.
Yeah,
like you could say, hey, I just want to update you.
Absolutely. No, of course.
We just had on Elton John. Maybe Billy Joel might be interested.
It's interesting. You know, we have a mutual friend, Jillian Siegel, who I thought wrote a terrific book, you know, called Getting Here, which talked to all these very successful people. And I think one of the things that she did was when she would repeat asking, she wouldn't just forward it. She wouldn't say checking in. She would send a fresh email to allow that person to feel like, hey, I just got this here, to let that person off the hook so that they didn't feel guilty and to start off, you know, fresh. And so I, you know, I'm careful with the words I use or how I do it or, and that's why I try and be like, hey, I know I'm annoying. I know I'm neurotic, but here's why I think it could be good. And
you get fresh content.
I get fresh content or you could follow up with that person, you know, that same person and say, you know, in this case, this person's a wonderful woman named Claire Mercury. And you could say, hey, you know, you have Christie Brinkley. We'd love to have her on, you know, about her book or her wine line and let us know and you'll come. And then they'll be like, okay, well, we'll get back to you about John Mellencamp or so-and-so. But I treat everybody with respect. And I want everything to be a win-win. I'm not going to be unreasonable, nor are you, you know.
So if you're asking two or three times to avoid kind of the annoyance factor, you change the story slightly. You change the ask slightly.
Yes. As I know, as you know very well, I can't totally avoid the annoyance factor, as you know. It's like I'm going to probably be annoying. but no, you try and minimize it.
It seems like you have a strategy. Sometimes on the flip side, somebody will want to come on the podcast, or let's say someone wants to come on your older shows
Of course.
You have a very good connect the dots strategy. Like, okay, this person's represented by this agent or manager. Let's you know, we'll put on this person. Now we can ask. Now we have an extra ask that we can do of the agent or manager. Do you find that works or not really?
Probably not, because it's probably like what we've said. Like, I think it depends on the person. You know, I've done that a few times and it worked because the person had, you know, the person had integrity, and that the other person and the person had a lot of control over both those people, and we're like, okay, I'll give you this person if you do this person, and I could see a reason to do both of them.
Yeah, like someone recently pitched me and said, hey, can you come on my podcast? And I did a little research and I saw, oh, he was on some very big podcast. I didn't know him, but he was on some very big podcast. So I figured, okay, this may, you know, I don't know him, but and I'm not trying to be just, I'm not trying to just game it like, oh, he knows him, so... But I figure, okay, there's interesting content here that could happen. And so I'll say, so I said yes in that one, in that case. But if someone just out of the blue says, hey, can you come on my podcast? Most of the time I'll say no, because I won't know the person or anything. There won't be the plausible reason.
Yeah, I just think that, okay, you know, we tried now or then, you know, and that's one reason why I do try and read the newspapers or... You know, because we forget about stuff too, and you'll read and you'll say, oh, wow, I really need to get back to Spike Lee. He's got that new movie, or, you know, or so-and-so.
And now that you wrote to them 6 months ago, your name is still fresh in the memory of the publicist.
I had a problem with people I worked with, and that's fine. It's the old, like, how come everybody drives faster than you's a lunatic and everybody drives slower than you's a cripple? But I felt that... I would always do my best, you know, and you know, I would try to do my best. So like if there was a story, even if you weren't going to get them, at least I had their contact information handy, or I knew where to get them. So next time I could, you know, be quicker or something. So I have it. So, you know, if you ever said, oh, we needed Paul McCartney, I would know where to go. And I usually, and it's just working hard and doing your best and treating people the way you'd want to be treated. So like I think I have a gauge for when I'm annoying or pushing it, but like
we just did that podcast about the Beatles. Actually, you should write back to Paul McCartney and say, "Look, we just did a whole podcast."
I'll do that. Like if we reach out to Serena Williams and you wrote this beautiful piece about that, or the Wu-Tang Clan, and they may say, "Why should I be on this guy's podcast?" And I'm like, "Well, he used to do their websites, or he used to break dance, or he's a really bright guy, or Akon, you're into Bitcoin, and James is really knowledgeable about that." So I think different people are going to have a different reason to do it. Like Jerry Seinfeld was a very big Mets fan, so he would call in to Steve Summers at WFAN, and it seemed he thought he was funny and he liked him. And so, look, we're not kind of like in Dumb and Dumber where she says, "Well, what are my chances?" And she says, "Well, one in a million." And he goes, "Well, what you're saying is I have a chance." You know, I don't.
Well,
what's your
worst experience with this? Like, what's the time when you asked and you probably did go over the line and you even felt bad?
I felt there was one time where I dealt with somebody and I just remember he was so abjectly like blunt and rude, and I just kind of was taken aback. And then I felt like, you know, it went sideways, and he was like, "Steve, you sound like an entitled child." And
for this podcast, or
for this podcast, and I
who was it?
That's a story for another day, you know. But in this particular case, it was somebody's manager. It wasn't a publicist. It was somebody I thought about it in retrospect. You know, that manager, they don't have as much of an interest. If you get back to Zig Ziglar, get whatever you want by helping enough other people get what they want, maybe he feels like, what does it do for me? Like, I'm not going to get a cut of this. And publicist is incentivized to put a lot of people on. You know, they can go back and say, hey, we did the James Altucher show. We did Conan O'Brien. We did so-and-so. But in that particular case, I just remember, and I remember somebody telling me, Steve, you should have done this. You should have done that. And I remember saying to him, listen, I'm not perfect, you know, but I also feel like you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be honest. But I also said, Mariano Rivera saved a million games and he lost like 3 or 4 games. So like, I'm not going to like fall on my sword too much. You know, like I'm not perfect. And, you know, you can catch somebody at a bad time and it goes sideways. And that happens, you know.
So let's go the other direction.
Yeah.
What's an example where you asked, they said no. A month later, the story changed a little bit. So you asked again. They said no. And this happened 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
And finally they said yes.
It happens a lot. Well, I mean,
what was an example?
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think Tyra Banks, I mean, I remember emailing her person and, you know, her manager, and she didn't really have any familiarity with me or whoever. But then I tried her book person, you know, and that book person had a different kind of agenda. She knew, like, you would move books. She knew that you were a great interviewer. She knew me. The other person really didn't know me. And so, you know, I think sometimes there's an affinity where if you have with people and they trust you. And
your story has to match their agenda a little bit. So you have to say, here's who James is or whoever you're working with. Here's who they are. Here's the other guests they've had on similar to so-and-so. Here's why it might be good. You still have to build that story. You just
absolutely.
Can't.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, yeah, absolutely. And I don't want something for nothing like a lot of people do. I think we work hard and I want to continue to work hard. So I'm kind of like, okay, you know, like Seth Godin said, like when he was rejected three times, like good, 96 more rejections. Like we're going to, it's, and not that we revel in that. We want to succeed. We want to bring great people out to people. We want to be excited about what we're doing.
And who do you think is the most inaccessible person you ever asked to go on this podcast?
Well, Bernard Madoff, I mean.
I actually thought.
Yeah, he's accessible.
Why would he say no?
Yeah, he's bored.
The guy is just in jail making license plates.
True.
How did they say no to you?
He had to sign something. We emailed the Bureau of Prisons, and he's at a place in Butner, North Carolina, and he has to say no, you know, niet, I'm not doing it. Too bad, so sad. And that's kind of, and they send you back a form letter. Hey, request is denied, and inmate, blah, 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 blah. Bernard Madoff says no, you know, pound sand. And it was
can
a
you,
whole
can
form.
Can you forward me that email? That's
of course.
That's a great email.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I got to frame that.
Oh, yeah. And I know you felt particularly kind of unnerved because it's one thing to get rejected. And I want to make this, take a moment to, I have a friend, a very funny comedian, Tom Frank, and he always used to use this joke where he said, the worst part about a rejection isn't the rejection, but it's the exhale before the rejection where you say, hey, what are you doing Saturday night? And he says, nothing good's going to come out of her mouth. You know, she's not going to be like, I thought you never ask, you know? So but I think that I do think subtly when you keep asking, you know, people will start associating you with that and say, why not them? You know what? If it was good
because
enough for so-and-so.
Because even if they've said no to you 100 times, suddenly your name's familiar to them.
Yeah.
You're like a player in their space somehow.
Yeah, I think so. I just remember, look, I used to try and do a lot of different things. And one thing I promise you, and for anybody listening, I don't try and handle people. I don't try and manipulate people. I try and be as genuine, as forthcoming as possible and treat people the way you want to be treated. But I think that I try and have fun and crack jokes or something. So, you know, when people associate you with something fun. And I remember years ago when I was in radio, there was the Heidi Fleiss story. And there was a situation with the Mayflower Madam. And I called her, you know, I want to say Sydney Biddle Barrows. And she said, Steve, I'm trying to turn over a new leaf. And then I said, well, why don't you turn off a new leaf tomorrow and do our show today, you know?
Or why doesn't she express it on your show that she's turning over?
Yeah, and I think, like, I know a great book called Choose Yourself. And in that book, you talk about choice and how you have a lot of choices. And I realize that, too. Like, we can choose to be despondent. We can choose to look at it like, oh, we've had X amount of rejections or not. I see it like we're learning. We're getting more information on what they want or what we don't want, and we're getting ourselves out there and we're making progress. I also see it that a great baseball player bats 300 to hit 3 out of 10 or whatever it is. But I think that, I just kind of feel like you have to, you know, keep at it and hopefully the time will be right. Like sometimes it's timing, you know?
I think the key thing here is maybe there's a couple key lessons. One is you find when the season's right.
Yeah.
So like Taylor Swift might not have anything going on that would, suggest that she should communicate to this audience.
Yeah.
But maybe if she had a book coming out about, I don't know, whatever, choosing herself, then she might want to talk. Then you could have a story. You start to put together a story.
Yeah.
I think the second thing is you can be persistent if you still build a plausible story, but you freshen up the story each time. So like maybe Taylor Swift, or I just say put that in quotes, I don't know. Maybe she gets into a situation where she wants to express what she really meant. This might be an opportunity for it. So now you're able to say, oh, we've dealt with similar situations. This might be an opportunity for her, and she's in New York anyway. So you kind of freshen up the story.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is that you're not being annoying. It's not like you would write 7 days in a row with the exact, like just the forward and the forward and the forward, or bump, I get that.
Absolutely. That's awful. And I thought about that before because I'd emailed somebody and they didn't get back to me. And you want to be like, just making sure you receive this, whatever euphemism you want to do, checking in. I find that insulting. And I think like whenever I do anything, I do try and think of what's my intent. Is it just my ego? Is it just me being bored? Is it just being kind of like, hey, they need to get back to me? And it's not about me. They have a big job and they have a lot of other things to do. And we're one part of it, but we can help them and we can do a great interview. We can add value.
I think the fourth thing though is really important, which is that if you have those first three, the fourth thing is that they see your name. They see the name. And so a lot of people who don't ask, they never see those names.
Sure.
So when it finally comes to the time where, hey, we think Taylor Swift or whoever, Billy Joel, should go on a podcast, the only name the publicist knows in the meeting at the agency is, oh, well, this guy, Steve Cohen, who used to do a good day in New York, he keeps writing me. I'll write to him and see what's possible. And it seems like there's a fifth. So the important thing is to kind of always kind of be in the mix without being annoying. And that's why you put together these plausible stories.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, is there a
fifth? It's like the best ability is availability, you know? And you have to just kind of be there and be top of mind. And
you have to always be conscious of not being annoying. Like using the cliches, like just moving to the top of your inbox or whatever. I'm trying to think of what other.
But I do think that as much as I also sometimes I'm not too timid and on eggshells with people because I think there are people who aren't as dedicated or passionate about what they're doing, and everything is an imposition. And I think we all worked with people like that whenever you would go in and they act like they're giving you their kidney to do something. And that's their problem, not an our problem, you know? And I think like we shouldn't be intimidated. And I think it's a form of them trying to keep you at arm's length. And I'm sorry, you know, your job is to respond. If you're not the right person, then we'll find the right person to do it. And
you know, the same thing goes for, like, I know you help other people get on other podcasts, right? So you're able to, you know, write to somebody and say, hey, here's so-and-so for your podcast. Here's why it might be interesting. Again, you do the same thing. This plausible story.
Yeah.
They might not respond. Chances are they don't respond if it's a no. But again, if the story, it's the same principles.
Yeah, I think so. And you look, eventually, like anything else, like if you keep handing people these clunkers or give people who, you know, reflect poorly on you, then you're going to have less and less capital and cachet. But
the plausible story helps with that.
Yeah. I think so. I think that, you know, look, I always want to be around people, and I think you're one of them, like where you want everything. I want everything for that other person that I want for myself. You want to be around people who want, you know, not just for you, them to have the cake and you could have the crumbs. You want them to have bright, beautiful future. And you want them to be like, I want you guys to do well. Of course, it doesn't make sense for you to do our thing. But if you are going to do one, please do ours. Or if you are going to do something that maybe you want to reach our audience or sit down there for more than 10, 15 minutes or have a nice conversation or, you know, different people out there. And we're not going to know unless we reach out to them are going to be like, wow, I actually really like, you know, James. You know, I thought, you know, the Go-Go's are going to be on Broadway, and we had reached out, and there, Belinda Carlisle's husband emailed and said, you know, hey, love James. He's amazing. Choose Yourself is a great book. And, you know, so you don't know. And that was something where, yeah, I think it could be really nice and it'd be thoughtful. Yeah.
I'll add one more dimension to if they respond with a no. One way you can respond is say, totally understand, we're always around, we're big fans, here's the reasons, you know, just repeating the reasons why.
We're interested.
But you could also say, listen, if Taylor Swift is considering podcasts, I'm happy to give advice about which podcasts in the industry might be the best for her and overlap it most with her audience or achieve her goals the most. So this way it's almost, we're performing a service like out of the goodness of our hearts. Which we would be, because we'd want to build a relationship.
Yeah, that's how we are. I honestly think that's how we are. Are we the greatest people in the world? Yes. No. Are we the greatest people in the world? No, but I think we are sincere. And you are always very generous with people around you. And yeah, maybe you could tell our listeners when did you realize that you have to offer a lot to other people rather than just ask? When did you make that turn?
Well, I think it's a self-esteem issue. I always felt like I'm worthless, so I have to offer as much, I have to try to convince using logic as many arguments as possible, like why this might be a good thing. So I think part of it is insecurity. Like if I just write to somebody and say, oh, I should be on your podcast, when should I come on? Or if I write to someone and say, hey, you should be, you know, Barack Obama, you should come on my podcast. What are you doing the afternoon of July 25th? Like that's almost too much confidence.
And
so, okay, given that I don't have that much confidence and also I'm reasonably intelligent, I realize that you have to build a story. You have to build a bridge between yourself and that other person and perform a service. That's why I say, hey, Barack Obama, even if you don't want to come online, I have some ideas about some good, strategically, some good podcasts you could do.
Sure.
You know, particularly given now you have this Netflix deal to do documentaries and maybe, you know, here are some TV-focused podcasts that might be interesting or fun.
Yeah, I do something similar to that, but I particularly like when you would offer to take people for coffee. What was the revelation you learned from that?
So that was in Choose Yourself. So first I wrote my 20 heroes, hey, can I take you out for a cup of coffee? And I realized, why would Warren Buffett, you know, want to have a cup of, you know, he doesn't need me to pay 60 cents for a cup of coffee with him. He just, you know, automatically said, no, you have to. So what I did was I did research on everyone and I came up with 10 ideas for business ideas to help improve their businesses for each one. And I said, you could have these businesses for free. I mean, these business ideas for free. I'm not asking anything, you know, good luck. And three out of the 20, got back to me, and this was in 2002. Two of those people now have been on our podcast, of those three, and one, his brother's been on our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like when we reach out,
you have to always give.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you are right. So when people, I think in life, when people are making requests of you, they're unreasonable and unrealistic, and they're not the kind of people you'd want to work with because they're not thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves, and they're not, and you could tell they're not thinking, they're only thinking about themselves because they haven't done their research. They haven't invested in it. They haven't made a case for why this person would be great for you. And so, you know.
So it's making the case, it's changing the case when you're persistent. And it's also, there's this background strategy of, hey, I want my name to always be in the radar. So yeah. They know it, like a year from now,
yeah.
They know when they see the email from me, they'll open it.
I used to do that. I used to say, okay, I can't necessarily use this person who is talking about student loans on this particular day, but you know what? If we're doing something on this 6 months from now, you know, and that's why I tried to read everything and do my homework and prepare. And so that, yeah, later on you could access that. And perhaps that's with them too. A lot of it's timing.
So, about 5 or 6 years ago, I had a book deal to write a book called The Power of Ask.
Yeah.
And it was right after I did The Power of No. And I never wrote the book. I actually had the deal. I never wrote the book. I apologize to the publisher. I never wrote the book. But this podcast, I think, summarizes The Power of Ask. You do it so well. You do it much better than I would do it. And thanks once again, Steve Cohen, for coming on the podcast, as well as being the producer of the podcast.
Thank you for asking me. It's the power of you asking.
Exactly.